am Cynthia L. Simmons. I am part of Daughters of the American Revolution, DAR. September is Constitution Month. It is the month that we celebrate the inauguration of the Constitution, but a lot of people don't know much about it.
That is dangerous because we could lose history. Let me tell you a story.
I have a granddaughter, and about a year ago when she was four, she finally figured out who I was. And she'd come to me and she would say, "You are my grandmother." And I would say, "Yes, you know, I told her before." She doesn't live in the same state with me, so she doesn't see me often. Finally, I told her Aunt Charity was her mother's sister. And so she went running to her mother and she said, "Oh, mother, Aunt Charity is your sister." And of course, my daughter said, "Yes, I know." Well, because she does not live in the area with us, we have a pretty big extended family. And she could very well miss some of the members of our family. Unless someone told her who they are, she might not know. Well, the same is true of our country. It is very possible that there are things that have happened in the past that have shaped what America is, and we might not know what they are. So today I have Tim Barton with me, and he is going to be talking to us about the Constitution. He is president of Wall Builders, which is a pro-family organization, and they let everybody know about America's forgotten history with an emphasis on religious, moral, and constitutional heritage. So welcome, Tim.
Well, thanks for having me. Good to be with you today.
Tell me why we even needed the Constitution. Didn't we have another form of government before that? And why was it even necessary?
Yeah, well, if you back up to we could go back to the American Revolution to really unfold some of this story. We were British colonies, and there was a lot of tyranny and there was a lot of oppression happening under the king. If you go back to the Declaration, they listed 27 reasons, 27 grievances we had that we thought we need to separate from the king. And under the Declaration, we acknowledged that we believed that there was a divine creator and that all men were created equal, and that they were endowed by their creator, given by God these certain rights, and government existed to protect those rights. This was a fundamental difference in our ideology of government, is we believe that the king was not the main authority, the giver of rights. If there was a God, and God gave us rights. And so there was a major level of friction with the king. We end up separating. Of course, we go through the American Revolution. And at the end of the Revolution, we are now forming a new system of government. And really during the Revolution, they wrote the Articles of Confederation. It wasn't until really at the end of the Revolution that we start really fully operating according to the Articles of Confederation that finally gets ratified. But the Articles of Confederation, one of the things the founding fathers were nervous about was under the king was able to say and do whatever he wanted, and really oppressive and abusive ways towards the colonies and states. And so the founding fathers said, we want to make sure that the government cannot abuse power to any of the colonies or states. And so in the Articles of Confederation, they gave government the authority to make any declaration they wanted to make, but they gave them no power to enforce the declaration. And so Articles of Confederation, the founding fathers, for example, during the Revolution, they agreed that we should import 20,000 Bibles for students in schools in America during the Revolution, because our work with Great Britain had been fractured, and we were using a lot of trade routes with the British ships, and a lot of our work with Great Britain in trade had been seized and stopped. And so we said, man, we can't trade with Great Britain anymore. So they said, well, let's go to Holland. We can import 20,000 Bibles from Holland. And the founding fathers agreed. They actually approved to import 20,000 Bibles. The problem was they only had the power to say they agreed to do that. They didn't have power to tax or collect money or to enforce anything they were saying. And so under the Articles of Confederation, they realized there was a lot of limitations for our country that we weren't going to be able to really fully function properly as a united nation. So when you have the Constitutional Convention of 1787, when they came together, this was one of the things that many states, when they would send delegations, their delegation came with the idea that we need to fix the Articles of Confederation to make it give the federal government power and authority to actually enforce and do things. But some founding fathers recognized the Articles of Confederation, they're just too broken, and this is never going to work. We need an entirely new system. And so you had people like George Washington, founding fathers, Noah Webster, who was a soldier during the American Revolution. He was the guy who actually did the dictionary. He did many early education books, was known as kind of the schoolmaster to America. you had many guys, notable founding fathers, calling for a new constitution. And so when they got together, this is where they start trying to debate and figure out, are we going to do the Articles of Federation? Are we going to do a new constitution? But that's kind of some of the background leading up to why they thought we even needed a different system of government, because when we separated from the king and we started being independent nations, so to speak, we were all independent colonies, independent states, we had a system of a federal government with this kind of broken, flawed idea of not really government power, but giving them power to say something. And they realized Articles of Federation just wasn't good enough. We needed something different.
I remember hearing about this, the writing of this, when I was in school. And I remembered that they put straw on the street so that it would be quiet for the men inside. Have you ever heard that?
I have heard several things around that, yes, they didn't want to distract them. But I think some of that can be taken a little bit with a grain of salt, because when the founding fathers were together, coming up with the ideas for the Constitution, at first, different states were proposing different plans. And so Virginia had a plan, and New York had a plan, and multiple states came with proposed solutions to resolve the issues they had with the Articles of Confederation or to have a new constitution. But every state had their own idea, and no state liked anybody else's idea. And so for the first several weeks, all they did was really argue back and forth. And so the idea that, you know, maybe people going by wanted to be quiet and not disturb them, that's a good idea. But I think after a couple of days, they were arguing against each other loudly enough that probably at that point, maybe the other Americans around them realized, you know, they're pretty loud. I don't know if us, you know, pulling carts down these stone or cobble or brick roads is going to distract them at this point. They're elevating their voices a bit as they're arguing. So certainly we've heard things like that. And there's a lot of stories surrounding what happens at the Constitutional Convention. A lot of them, I think, have very good historic factual backing. You can go back and look at actual documents and see, yeah, that's what they said actually happened. But there certainly is a lot of context, because they were there for months. And during those months, there were a lot of debates, there were a lot of conversations, and a lot of discussions about why we needed a new form of government, of what that should look like, of how can we do the best job of respecting the rights of the people, knowing that we have God-given rights. How can we set up a system of government that we can respect those rights, but also they recognize the brokenness of humanity. They knew about the sinful human nature of man, and they said, okay, so we have to make sure we can't centralize power. We need to have a separation of powers, and we even need different branches of government. And even with the representation, we can't do it just based on population, because some states, there were four states that had the vast majority of the population. And so if you give just representation based on population, then four states would have had the majority of the population. And the other founding fathers said, well, then every president will come from one of your states, because you'll just choose one of your own members to be the president. We want there to be other representation in Congress. So they came up with a bicameral system that the Senate was based on. The state would get two senators regardless of size, and the House was based on representation. They began having all these conversations and brilliantly unfold and put together the most successful governing document in the history of the world. But certainly there's a lot of great records and a lot of stories that surround the unfolding of this great document.
One thing you're saying that I want to highlight, and that is that they argued a long time. You know, for some reason, our people these days are afraid of letting opinions out there and disagreeing with people. And sometimes it takes a lot of different people from a lot of different viewpoints to come together and form something. And so arguments are not necessarily bad.
Especially when we're talking about arguments over policy, over things of how can we, when you're trying to resolve problems, when you're trying to fix issues, and you're arguing about what is the best way to fix this, those are the best arguments and hard conversations to have, because we're arguing about how do we make things better. Well, those are things we should be discussing. And it's okay to, as you're mentioning, have those at times heated conversations. And you know, it's interesting, in the midst of the Constitutional Convention, when they get about 4.5 weeks in, it was so contentious that actually delegates, they said, we've had enough of this arguing. We can't take it anymore. And delegates literally begin to get up and leave. It was reported that George Washington, who was the president of the convention, actually chased down George Mason, who was another man from Virginia. He was one of the leaders of the Virginia delegation. And it was reported that George Washington goes to George Mason and says, hey, we cannot give up on this. We can't abandon this. We have fought too hard and too long what we did to the revolution. Just getting here, we have to stay together. And essentially, George Mason tells him, look, I'll stay because I respect you, but I don't think this is going to work at all. In the midst of that contention, this is where Benjamin Franklin on June 28, 1787, gave the longest speech he gave during the entire Constitutional Convention. And the speech he gave was reminding them that, gentlemen, we've looked to every possible form of government in history. We've examined what people are doing now, and we found nothing suitable to our circumstance and situation. He said, but in the midst of us trying to find the answer, he said, how was it hitherto not once thought to us of humbly applying to the Father of Lights to illuminate our understanding? He said, in the beginning of the contest with Great Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayer in this room for divine protection. Now, they were in Independence Hall when they were writing the Constitution. Independence Hall is also where they wrote the Declaration. Franklin is one of only six guys that signed the Declaration and also signed the Constitution. So Franklin was reminding them, guys, we were in this room several years ago. And when we were here in the middle of the Revolution, we prayed every single day asking God for help. And he said, our prayers were heard. They were graciously answered. Well, you can read this whole speech, and I encourage people, go online, read this entire speech. It is really profound. Franklin finishes his call and he says, guys, we need to spend time in prayer, because if God doesn't help us, he said, a nation can't rise without his help. We need to turn to God and we need to ask God for help. This was Franklin's call to prayer. Well, that motion actually ends up being tabled, but they decide the following week they're going to have a big anniversary celebration, and they're going to do it because that was June 28th. They actually called for a 3-day weekend. George Washington said it was a cooling off period. But the next week, they were going to do a 4th of July celebration. And so they were going to bring in a pastor to come do the celebration. And they said, look, when a pastor comes, we'll just invite this pastor to stay and he can continue to lead us in prayer. But the 3 days they took off, George Washington says that as a delegation, they actually went to church for 3 days. They went to the church of the Reverend William Rogers, who led them in prayer and oration. And when they came back at the end of 3 days, delegates talked about how the entire atmosphere in the convention had changed, and where they had only been able to disagree before, now they were able to start finding common ground and working together. And so in the midst of the point you're making, that I think it's super valid and important that right now we recognize as individuals that it's time for us to start standing up and not being afraid of confrontation, not being afraid of having tough conversations, not being afraid of being canceled, but saying, look, we need to talk about what is really happening in the culture, what's happening in the world, what is actually true, what's actually constitutional. And as a Christian, I would even say what is biblical, right? I want to know, what does the Bible say about this issue? Where should we be standing on this issue? In the midst of that, having tough conversations is very important. But also, one of the things the founding fathers even acknowledged and recognized is that if all we do is have tough conversations, if God doesn't help us, then we won't succeed in what we're trying to do. And Franklin said, we better make sure we remember God in this or we won't be successful. Well, they did remember God. And they did end up writing the most successful governing document in the history of the world. No nation has lived longer under a single document, under a single constitution than we have. Our constitution is roughly 232 years old. But what's more significant is in the history of the world, the length of the average constitution only lasts for 17 years. That's the average length of the constitution in world history.
Ours is 234 years this year, this September.
Yeah, it is literally the most successful governing document in the history of the world. And this is something why every September, September 17th, we have Constitution Day. We should look back and remember part of what makes this nation so unique is we have a constitution unlike anywhere else in the world, that our constitution respects the rights of the individual. It respects we the people. It places limitations on the federal government saying, there are certain things they can never do to infringe upon our God-given rights, and that their primary job is to protect our God-given rights. And it goes through, we have three branches of government. There really were so many brilliant things the founding fathers put in there. And a lot of those things were actually, in fact, based off scripture as well.
Yes. And I think you made a huge point, and that is prayer. Because prayer makes an incredible difference. When you pray, God answers. And especially when those men prayed for those 3 days and then came out and the atmosphere was different. See, I think you need God to be part of the process, or else you're going to mess up. And they did.
And that's absolutely right. And it's something that a lot of times today, people looking back, they don't even understand the level of connection the founding fathers had with God or with the Bible or with Christianity. And there were a couple of professors who went back and they wrote a book called The Origins of American Constitutionalism. And they went back to study the founding fathers. And specifically, they said they were going to look at 15,000 representative writings from the founding fathers, and they were going to go through those writings, and they wanted to see who the founding fathers quoted. They said, if we can see who they quoted, we can see who was really influencing them and what they were doing. And so they went through these writings, and they found thousands of quotes in those writings. As they found thousands of quotes, they decided they needed to track those quotes back and see where they came from. And so if you look at this book, one of the things they identify is the most quoted individual was Charles Montesquieu. He wrote The Spirit of the Laws. He was a Christian guy in the Enlightenment. Then the second most quoted individual was Blackstone. He wrote Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England that the founding fathers referred to a lot. And then the third most quoted individual was John Locke. And these professors pointed out that during the American Revolution, John Locke was the most quoted guy. But when you go forward and look more at the Constitution and the years after that, that he was only the third most quoted individual. Now, those are the most quoted individuals. But what these professors pointed out is that was not the most quoted sources. The most quoted source in all of the founders' writings was the Bible. And 34% of all of the quotes they found came from the Bible. And this matters because you're talking about when you look at the writing of the founding fathers during the era of the Constitution, as they're together and they're trying to figure out what's the best solution and where do our ideas come from, the single source that was the most influential to the founding fathers, and this is based on their writings, this is a source they quoted the most, was the Bible. And it was four times more than any other source. Today, most Americans have no idea how influenced the founding fathers were by Christianity or by the Bible, or even how much our system of government, how much the Constitution itself was influenced by the Bible. But this is something that is very well documented.
That is true. And I remember years ago, I listened to Francis Schaeffer talk about Christianity and how he said, every other system is too fragile. It will break, just like the bridges will break if you drive a heavy truck over some of those old bridges built in the Roman Empire. But Christianity is strong because it recognizes the nature of man and who he is, and it shows a God who created redemption to bring us back to him. And so with our Constitution based on the Bible, that explains to me why it's strong.
It does. And this is why, I mean, this is why the founding fathers argued you have to have a separation of powers. If you can go back and read, there was letters from John Adams and George Washington and James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, and all of these guys said the reason we have to have the separation of powers is because we can't trust the individual, because we know the heart of man is deceitful, it's wicked, it's desperately sick. Now, you probably recognize those words I just said.
I do.
Those are actually from Jeremiah 17:9. Right? Most Americans, if we just read the founding fathers' writings, we might read stuff like that where they say the heart of man is wicked and deceitful, is desperately sick, no man can trust it. And we wouldn't think anything other than, oh, they're making some judgment on the heart of man. Actually, they're quoting a specific Bible verse. And the Bible verse they're quoting was a recognition of what used to be known in theological terms as the depravity of man or the fallen state of man. They recognize because man is sinful at his core, right? Because there was a reason Jesus came, because nobody's perfect. They knew that man is not perfect, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And because of their base understanding and that recognition, they said, this is the reason we cannot centralize power. Because if you centralize power, even if you think you have a good person, ultimately we know the heart of man, that there's flesh and it can't be trusted in and of itself. And so they said, we need to separate powers. And even the reason we have three branches is that way, if one branch becomes corrupt, maybe the other branches will be able to keep it in check until we can replace the person who has that corrupt heart and get somebody different in there. And this is something, even when you read the Federalist Papers, right? When James Madison talks about how, right, if men were angels, we wouldn't even need government. But the challenge is you have to recognize that you need a government that can help facilitate boundaries for men who are not angels, but at the same time, you need to have restraints on government who's not angels either. And they said, this is a big dilemma. We're trying to figure out how to do this in government, recognizing we need to place limitations and boundaries on government, on individuals, because of the fallen state of man. And this is something that, because they recognized the basic principles of what's taught in Christianity, but really it's just of the reality of the world, right? The reality of the world is revealed to us, is taught to us from the Bible. But the reality of the world is that people aren't perfect, and they knew people weren't perfect, and they created a system of checks and balances, of a separation of powers. And if you read their writings, they actually quote the specific Bible verses that even inspired them to do this. Yeah. It was their understanding of the Bible that led to them being able to construct and craft a document that has been so successful. And it's not just because it was the brilliance of their writing. It was because it was their reliance on the basic fundamental principles of reality that is revealed in Christianity and the Bible. They knew those. And when they applied the principles of the Bible, that's really what's helped our Constitution be so successful.
It has. And I've heard people that they say, oh, communism sounds so good, but people end up oppressing each other. And I said, yes, isn't that interesting? The founding fathers recognized that people want to come here and they want to get out of communist countries. So our Constitution is special. I'm glad we have it.
Absolutely. And, you know, as you mentioned, it's interesting as we talk about people want to come here. They're not trying to leave America. They're trying to come to America.
Yes.
It's interesting that for the last several years, we have had so many TV personalities, right? So many movie stars, so many politicians talk about, well, if so-and-so gets elected, I'm just going to leave America. You notice they never leave America.
They never leave.
Mm-hmm. Right? It's a nation so great that even the people who don't like America don't want to leave.
That's right.
Well, there was an old adage that said a really good way to measure a nation is see who is trying to get in and who is trying to get out.
Right.
There is a reason we have an immigration problem in America. There's a reason that China does not have an immigration problem. Russia does not have an immigration problem. America has an immigration problem. There's something we are doing here that is more special than anywhere else in the world. And it largely goes back to so much of what we do based on this constitutional republic. The Constitution the founding fathers wrote really was one of the most brilliant documents that recognized the brokenness of man, but also recognized the value of the individual, the uniqueness of the individual, the freedom of choice. So many things they put together in this document, and it really has preserved freedom in this nation longer than any other nation in the history of the world has preserved freedom, because no other constitution has lasted longer. Most nations go through a revolution every 30 to 40 years on average. America has enjoyed stability unprecedented in the world, and it's, again, because of the uniqueness of our Constitution.
Tim, thank you so much for being with us and sharing with us the history of the writing of the Constitution.